What's going on, Tin and J-Man Show Nation? Hope everybody has had a fantastic start to their week as it is Monday night, June 10th, 2024. And if you're watching this live on the ISC Sports Network, on the Tin and J-Man Show Facebook page, on the Tin and J-Man Show or ISC Sports Network X page or the ISC Sports Network YouTube channel, you can see that Josh the J-Man Mutt is not my co-host tonight. He is a little under the weather. Don't eat bacon, friends. Don't eat bacon. Or if you're going to eat bacon, don't eat the non-name brand bacon, so to speak, according to Josh. So filling in for the J-Man tonight is my father, Eric Lee. Dad, thanks for joining me on the show once again.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's Tan and the Old Man show today.
Tan and the Old Man. I was going to say Tan and the A-Train or the Tan and Eric show, but if you get permission to say Tan and the Old Man, I guess we'll roll with it. But either way, happy to have you here for episode 395. Pretty crazy that J-Man and I are closing in on episode 400 here in a few short weeks.
Yeah, that's a lot of shows.
A lot of shows. It's not always been every Monday, but it has been every single week since late November of 2016. And we appreciate everybody who tunes in each and every week. Couldn't do this show without you. But with all that said, since it's my turn this week to answer the birdie or bogey question, I asked you to provide one. So hopefully you have done so.
I have got something here for you. As you well know, the U.S. Open Golf Championship is going to be held this week in Pinehurst, North Carolina.
Yep.
It's one of the four majors that of the golf season, Grand Slam event. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, who's the last person to win one of the four majors in a playoff?
Wow. That's really good. It's a really good question. I think I know it, but I'm not 100% sure, but I like, okay. I like the question. Yeah. I like the question. So the last person to win the playoff in one of the four majors.
Correct.
Okay.
And each there's a little different playoff formats in each of the four majors. I think right. The U.S. Open has now adopted a two-hole playoff. It used to be correct. 18 back when Tiger beat Rocco Mediate
back in 2008.
Yeah.
Yep.
But now it's just two holes. They want to get it done the same night in front of the big TV audience.
Just two holes. The Masters is what, three?
Believe so.
Or just sudden death.
Well, when Bubba won, it was sudden death.
I know sure. The British Open's four.
PGA's three, I believe.
Okay.
So I think the Masters might be sudden.
Okay. All righty. Well, the birdie or bogey segment is brought to you by, like it is every week, Arlington Public House. Arlington, it's Monday, so you know what that means. It's Pizza Monday at the Arlington Public House. Last week, they had dill pickle pizza, supreme pizza, cheese pizza, pepperoni pizza, and margarita pizza. So pizza for everybody's liking out there. And their weekend feature was carne asada fries. I'm looking at the picture right now and looks pretty good. I'm a fan of French fries, whether they're doctored up or plain. So if carne asada is right up your alley, you make sure to take advantage of that next time they have that on the menu. And the Arlington Public House has upscale cuisine and cocktails with a casual atmosphere. And they are located on 703 Main Street in Rochester, Indiana. So if you're around the Rochester area, any day, Monday through Saturday, and you're looking for a good place to eat dinner, stop on by the Arlington Public House, and I guarantee you, you will not have a bad meal, and you won't be disappointed.
Good stuff.
All right, Dad. Well, I feel like we have a lot of basketball to talk about tonight. We have the NBA Finals going on.
That
we currently see the Boston Celtics have a 2-0 lead over the Dallas Mavericks. I could even call them your Dallas Mavericks since you're a big Luka Doncic fan. Right. So we'll get into that. We also have the rumors of the NBA potentially expanding its league for the first time since it would be the first time since early 2000s when the then Charlotte Bobcats came into the league, which are now the Charlotte Hornets. hence why I have my Seattle Supersonics hat on. And also, Danny Hurley, UConn head coach, decided today that he was going to remain the head coach at the University of Connecticut, and he turned down the LA Lakers 6-year, $70 million offer.
So yeah.
Cover all of that. But first, let's go ahead and talk about the NBA Finals. Like I mentioned, Boston has a 2-0 lead over Dallas. Dallas kept it close last night. It wasn't a runaway like game one was, but I think the Mavericks are in trouble. I mean, that is kind of common sense being down 2-0, but I thought they had to steal one in Boston, one out of the two, if they want any chance to win this series.
Yeah, it's been overreaction day on the TV shows and stuff about that. We've seen teams come from 2-0 down before. The Miami Heat did it against Dallas in about 2006, I believe. Milwaukee just a few years ago was down 2-0 to Phoenix and swept the next four. But Wednesday night's game is absolutely pivotal. Nobody in the history has ever come from 3-0 down. Celtics have to feel good because their two stars didn't really shoot. Well, Jason Tatum was 6-for-22, and they still won. And Jaylen Brown had 6 turnovers, and they still won. Dallas is really only getting consistent scoring from Luka right now. Kyrie has been way less than his normal self. He averaged 25 for the year. He's averaging 14. Hasn't hit a three-pointer. As a matter of fact, Dallas as a team, I think I saw where Luka is 8-for-21 on threes, which is about 38.5%. The rest of the team is 5-for-32, which is 15.7%, and nobody on their team has hit more than one in these two games. So Dallas kind of lives with Luka and sometimes Kyrie penetrating, kicking it out to guys for wide open threes. They've been getting them. They've been missing them. There's the old saying that role players play better at home. They've got to, or this series could be over. So we'll see. I think Dallas will. I see they're a slight favorite on Wednesday night, like 1.5. But interestingly enough, Dallas has actually been a better road team in the playoffs than home. So we shall see.
It's interesting also to know that Kyrie Irving, since he stomped on the mid logo, with the mid Celtic logo when he was a member of the Brooklyn Nets, he's 0-12 against the Celtics since doing so.
Yeah. And he kind of made a dumb comment after Wednesday's game when they asked him about the crowd. He said it wasn't as loud as he thought it would be. I think they really let him have it last night.
Yeah, it's not like he's already the most hated professional athlete currently in the city of Boston. And he threw some gasoline on the fire there. So
that probably throws Luka off too, because I think he's used to being the hated guy at most arenas, and now he's not. It's his teammate Kyrie.
Right. So well, I think you hit on some good points there when you were talking about, some of the Celtic stars struggling, but them yet winning. I think no matter how you put these guys in order, I think if anybody was to do a draft of these two rosters, the top four players in any order would be Luka, Tatum, Irving, and Brown. Then after that, I think you probably draft 4 or 5 Celtics before you draft the next Maverick.
Oh, there's no question.
And I
no
think
question.
That's the difference in the series right now.
Yeah,
Celtics are just deeper.
Yeah, they're not even starting Porzingis, and he dominated game one.
Yeah, especially the first quarter.
Yeah, so I think you're right. The top 8 players in the NBA Finals, 6 of them are on the Celtics. And right now, Kyrie is not playing like number 3 or 4. He's playing like number 7 or 8. So Derek White would be a number 2 player on most NBA teams, and he's arguably their 5th most important player. And I think if they had to give an MVP of the finals right now, you'd have to give it to Drew Holiday or Porzingis or Brown. And then you start thinking about Tatum. So, and Tatum's first team all NBA. So,
right. And a lot of people don't bring up the Drew Holiday fact part of the trade, because in that trade was Damian Lillard, who was a 3-team trade, who got shipped from Portland to Milwaukee. That's the part that a lot of people talk about. Not Drew Holiday going to the to the Celtics. I got a comment here on Facebook from Ray Davis. He believes Brown is causing Irving's problems.
Yeah, I think Brown is, and I think Holiday is, you know. And on the other end of the court, you just can't let any of those guys open.
Right.
Every one of them is a good shooter. You got a 7'3 guy that can knock down threes with ease. You know, and
that's going to be Zach Edey next year.
Yeah. I don't think Zach can quite shoot like this guy can. And, he was a little banged up late in the game. We'll see how that affects, because if Porzingis goes out, that can change everything.
Lucas, or who was banged up? Porzingis was banged up late in the game. I didn't catch any of last night's game.
Late in the game, they were up 8 or 9 points. A rebound went out, and his leg got kind of leg whipped as he was going for the rebound, and they had to take him out. And the coach says there's no problems. Porzingis says there's no problems, but he was visibly limping the last 2 minutes he was in.
Yeah.
But Dallas can't quite stay in front of the Boston perimeter players. They're taking it the whole, whether it be on Luka or Kyrie. And interesting enough, Kyrie's known as outstanding ball handler. He's having trouble getting past his guys. And it's not just Tatum and Brown. It's even Peyton Pritchard off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Luka never can get by anybody, but he's just strong and he's a bull.
He kind of booty balls him around a little bit.
He does. So. He does. And what hurt him last night is I think he missed 4 out of 8 free throws, and then he had a ton of turnovers. The last one wasn't really his fault. They have to get the ball across the line in 8 seconds, and he got the ball with 7 and had to heave it down there, you know, but it still counts on him. But they're not getting the production from Lively that they got in the previous series. You know, P.J. Washington is still putting up around 15 a game. So, really, it kind of falls down on Kyrie's offense. And if as a team, they can stay in front of that Boston attack. So, I don't think it's over yet. But let's just say they have to get this next one. Well, really, in all reality, they got to get them both in Dallas. And then you got a series.
And it's interesting because I know you're rooting for the Mavericks because you really like Luka Doncic, but I don't find this Boston team as hateable as some of their other teams that have been good in the last 15 years or so.
Yeah, what's so good about them is they've got – it's not a one-man driven team.
You know,
it's usually LeBron or Steph and the supporting cast. And Dallas is that way. You know, it's Luka and then Kyrie to a lesser extent and the supporting cast. Boston is just – Brad Stevens did a fantastic job. Probably should get executive of the year for somehow getting Porzingis and Holiday.
Right.
Because this is a vastly different team. And the Boston team that didn't look all that impressive in the first three series by, you know, they swept Indiana, but they only really whooped him once. They didn't have Porzingis. And that's a big difference because, you know, Al Horford can't be playing 40 minutes a game anymore. I mean, he's been in the league since, what, 16 years, 18 years, something like that. So he's played the most playoff games in NBA history without I think Karl Malone maybe. But he's right up there with the most playoff appearances without winning a title.
Mm-hmm.
So because he was on that team with Yannick Noah – or not Yannick –
Joakim?
Yeah, Noah from the Florida Gators, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's been out there a long time.
Mm-hmm. Ray Davis, I'm glad he's sending this question because I was going to bring it up. Thoughts on the length off from conference finals to NBA finals? I mean, I don't think the NBA expected at all the Eastern Conference to be a sweep of series in 4 games and then the Western Conference only to go 5 games, and then they were stuck with – not 9 to 10 days off.
Yeah. It took momentum away from the NBA, you know.
Yep.
Ideally, they would have been playing on Tuesday instead of Thursday, you know. I think Dallas benefited a little bit because Luka's so banged up that he could have used a week off, but I thought that would work their advantage. But the very first game, you know, Boston slapped him around. So, of course, they hit every shot they took in the first quarter of that first game.
But it's also interesting the schedule of the days, too. It's like 3 days in between games, not 2 days.
This week it changes. I think it's Wednesday, Friday, and I would assume game 5, if if needed, would be on Sunday because they want that Sunday audience back in Boston. I'm not sure of that, but
I'm looking it up right now. So game three is Wednesday. Game four is Friday. Game five is Monday.
Oh, they June 17th.
Then game six is Thursday. And then it gets to a game seven. It's Sunday, June 23rd, which butts right up to the NBA draft pretty much.
Right. Well, I guess there will be a little competition in the sports world with the U.S. Open final being on Sunday. Maybe they should be over by the time the NBA starts, but maybe they didn't even want to share the stage that day.
But right. Well, I'm also looking up. I'm looking up the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. You got two games so far under the belt.
They played two?
Game two's tonight. Game two's tonight. Okay. Excuse me. Florida Panthers grab game one. Game three is on Thursday this week. Game four is Saturday. Game five next Tuesday. Game six would be next Friday. And then game seven, if needed, would be Monday, June 24th. So they never butt up with NBA.
Yeah. Yeah, they almost had a problem with Dallas being in both. You know, if Dallas would have lost, won that hockey series. So,
yep.
That's about as long a flight as you could have, I think, from Edmonton to Florida.
Yeah, Miami, Florida, let alone Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those guys get a little road weary.
Yeah.
I know Edmonton about where it's at, but. You know, I know the flight in football from the Seahawks to the Dolphins is about as long as you get. So I'm sure you'd have to add another hour to get to Edmonton anyway.
Yep. And I know we're talking basketball, but it is interesting, you know, another Canadian team trying to become the first since the 93 Montreal Canadiens to bring the cup home. That's just crazy. Wild to me.
Yeah.
They've had a lot getting the Stanley Cup final since, but nobody's able to do it. And so far,
right.
Florida's up 1-0. So.
Yeah, you don't think of hockey in Florida, but it's been pretty.
Which they're kind of due. The Panthers made it '96, but lost to the Avalanche. Then they made it last year, but lost the Golden Knights, and now they made it this year. But besides those 3 years, they've been one of the most lousy franchises in the Big Four sports. But
kind of like the Miami Marlins, right? And they won a couple World Series titles, and the rest of the time they've been just god awful.
J-Man's Dolphins aren't pulling their weight. He brought home some championships. The Marlins, the Dolphins haven't done squat.
When's the last time the Dolphins won a playoff game?
Were
you born?
Yes. My Dolphins last playoff.
I think I just made Josh throw up a little bit more.
Yeah, poor guy's done enough. December 30th, 2000 was overtime win over Peyton Manning, the Indianapolis Colts in the AFC wild card round.
Yeah, I was in Vegas at that time because on my way to Pasadena to watch Purdue in the Rose Bowl. So actually, Purdue played 2 days later. So you can always tell Josh that Purdue was in the Rose Bowl since the Dolphins won a playoff game.
The Dolphins have the longest drought in the NFL without a playoff win.
Wow.
Yeah. I believe. I don't think let me fact check that. I don't believe, because I think the Browns have won a playoff game since then.
Oh, they did under Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, they beat the in 2020.
Roethlisberger's
48-37 wild card game. Sorry, Sean Shriver. I know he's probably tuning in. Sorry to bring that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he requested that we talk at least 20 minutes on the U.S. over Pakistan cricket game, but I didn't really get a lot of info on that one yet.
You know, Josh, I think actually was trying to do some note taking for to talk about that a little bit this week, but of course now he's not here. So
yeah. But you could do that next week then.
So I'll have to Sean's do that next benefit. Week. Yes. Yes. So any other thoughts on the NBA finals?
Go Mavericks. I don't dislike the Celtics at all. They're a very worthy champion.
At one time you were arguably a Celtics fan back in the Larry Bird days.
First game I ever saw was, I was 8 years old. Bill Russell was still playing in 1969.
Yeah.
And John Havlicek was my first basketball hero, and he won a couple titles. And then, of course, Larry Bird. I wasn't such a big fan of Paul Pierce, Garnett, and Ray Allen. I did like Ray Allen, but the other two I could do without, but
mm-hmm.
this is a good team. They've been knocking on the door for years. It might just be their time.
Yep. They haven't won one since 08. And like you said, Brad Stevens has done a pretty good job constructing this roster. Looks like they're going to clamp down Tatum and Brown for a while, then just build around those two guys for next 5 to 6 years.
So. If I heard right, they may end up being the two highest paid NBA players next year.
Yeah.
One other good thing, if the Celtics do win, they now have more titles than the Lakers. Because all you hear, here it is, the NBA Finals, and then they try to make this announcement about Hurley, the night of the NBA Finals, trying to get attention. And they end up looking, in my opinion, kind of bad on this. Because one of two things, they either showed that, hey, we tried to get this guy and we just can't do it. Or B, they wanted to look like, hey, we tried for it. You know, we tried as hard as we could to get the guy. But who wants to be the second choice? You know, that they're all saying J.J. Redick, but who wants to come in when they know they're not?
Yeah. Get J.J. Redick, guy who's never coached basketball at any level.
I know.
That sounds smart.
He's a pretty good listener on his podcast.
No, he is, but how many times has that we've seen that fail? I mean, it's like Wisconsin Green Bay, what they're doing with Doug Gottlieb.
Yeah, well, PR, that gives them a little notoriety. Nobody else.
Yeah, but I mean,
90% of people couldn't tell you their nickname.
I wouldn't want to go coach LeBron. You do bad a year or two, you're fired.
And Anthony Davis is usually out 25 games a year.
Yeah, he presses the buttons, and you're going to have to draft LeBron's son most likely.
Yeah.
Who should not even be close to the NBA.
And then they all get mad at general manager Pelinka for not bringing people in. But when you're paying two guys about 65% of the team's salary, who are you going to get, right? So,
and two guys who control who touch the ball almost every time down the court, if not every time down the court when they're in.
Yeah, that's in the Lakers' job. I understand that if Hurley would have signed for $70 million 6 years, it would have made him the fifth highest coach. If they really wanted him, and it was a money thing, if you really wanted him, why didn't he offer him $80 million? Or
give him a blank check.
Yeah. You know, I understand Kerr and Popovich being the highest paid because they both won multiple titles.
Right.
But, I still don't see how everybody's so enamored with Ty Lue. He did win a title with Cleveland, but the year before they had made the conference finals with that David Blatt or Platt, whatever his name was.
Yep, David Platt, yep.
Then they won the next year, but ever since he's taken over the Clippers, you know, they're always picked in the
top. They're a joke. They're a joke.
Yeah, so.
They never get it done.
And I know the Lakers supposedly wanted Ty Lue because LeBron wanted Ty Lue 5 years ago. But
right, but.
I get a kick out of every announcer. Well, the two best coaches are Spoelstra and Ty Lue, but
I heard Spoelstra. I saw a rumor today, and it's already got squashed, Jay Wright, and said Davis came out and said he has a better chance of being the coach of Lakers than Jay Wright does. So.
Yeah. Yeah, Jay Wright's a class guy. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know who they're going to get to appease that fan base. And like you said, I also saw another thing about Hurley. The one NBA job they think could eventually get him away from UConn would be the Knicks.
Yeah, if Thibodeau gets accused of playing his guys 42 minutes a game next year, and I can see why some of these successful college coaches are now looking in the NBA because of this whole NIL crap and transfers, and you just have no control now.
Well, Hurley's already won with it in that environment. He's back-to-back champ. I don't know what else he could do at UConn, but as a good buddy of the podcast, Cameron Screeton, texts our friend group, he thinks he could see Hurley using this as motivation somehow for his team. Yeah. Like, I don't know, just spinning it somehow, this whole Lakers saga.
Well, I tell you, last 2 years, he's ran through those tourneys like it was nothing. And in Connecticut had been down, you know, since the
Cavs. Yes, they had.
They won that one with Kevin Ollie kind of out of nowhere. You know, and during the year you see Connecticut play and you say, yeah, they're really good, but you know, they're only beating Marquette by three or
The shoe's gonna fall eventually in the tournament, and they just had 2 years in a row they've thrown everybody.
And when they put that beat down on Illinois, I thought, oh boy, they
are good. 30-0 run. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think Alabama was hitting everything against them and
it's still down a bunch. And
yep. So
and the thing, I go back to the Purdue game and that's championship. I mean, they only let Purdue shoot 5 3-pointers. That was pretty incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, they have these 6'6" guards who can with speed and they're both gonna go in the first round.
Yep.
Which by the way, the NBA draft may be the worst. One of the worst two or three in history this year, at least.
Which is great for Zach Edey. So.
Yeah, we just don't know any of the, or at least I don't, these international
Don't know
guys.
The foreign guys. And like you said, you never know. Nikola Jokic went 41st in the draft. You never know. Yeah.
The one year I can remember, what was that guy's name? Went first, Bennett?
For the Cavaliers. Yeah. Yeah.
And then. Then Oladipo second and Cody Zeller fourth. You know, Oladipo was a good NBA player, made a couple all-star teams, but that was one terrible draft too. So
yeah.
This one's got the makings of being one as well.
Yeah. So it's got to be interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Indeed. So, but before we close our NBA talk, of course, I'm wearing the Seattle Supersonics hat. I've been on record saying, when, not if, when the Sonics come back, they're going to be my NBA team because I like the Pacers. I also root for the Nuggets, but I don't have a, you know, this is my team affiliation really with the NBA because I just don't care enough. But when the Sonics come back, I'll be all in. I think I got the J-Man on board. I got another good friend of the podcast, Connor Thompson, on board. So we're gonna go with the green and yellow when they come back. And Adam Silver was pretty much saying once this TV – you know, right stuff gets done, they're going to probably look into expanding. A lot of people are just think that means that Sonics are going to come back to Seattle, Vegas, probably getting a team. And then yeah. I'm assuming that would be two more in the West. I'm assuming then you shift Memphis to the East.
That makes the most sense.
I guess you could do Minnesota, but Memphis makes more sense.
Yeah. Memphis is sort east of thing. Minnesota. So yeah.
And Ray Davis says Kemp with a couple exclamation points.
Yeah.
And Thad Moody said it's not happening. They're not coming back.
Yeah. When Sean Kemp was there and Gary Payton, they were one of the victims of the Bulls in the early 90s, but the Rain Man could bring it.
It's 1996, actually. Jordan's return year. They were a victim to the Bulls.
I went and watched Kemp play against the Rochester Zebras when he was a senior, and I thought, this guy is lazy. And then when he got to the NBA, everything changed. He could play.
Well, he became lazy late in his career when he was a part of the Magic. But
He got a little chunky.
Got a little heavy. But
he had a lot of heads to feed.
My picks, families throughout the world. That's very true. My pick six segment. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Seattle is also the home of the great Steve Scheffler, played for Purdue. He was the 12th man on Seattle for about a decade.
Hey, I follow some Seattle fan accounts on Twitter. He's still a fan favorite. Sonic history to this day.
Yeah. So, yeah. Old
and
chef.
I'm not making that up. I am not making that up. They like him. So if I could find a Steve Scheffler Sonics jersey, that would be my jersey to purchase.
Or a Brian Cardinal Mavericks jersey.
My pick six segment this week revolves around the Sonics. And I found this article from 2008. The Seattle Times listed the 41 best Sonic players of all time since they were a franchise for 41 years. I'm going to go down the list 1 through 6. You give me your thoughts on these guys.
Okay.
Number one being Lenny Wilkins.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. He was a coach and a player.
Mm-hmm.
Lefty. He was a big assist man. He's probably one of the better coaches of a Hall of Fame basketball player. You know, usually that doesn't work out. Bird was successful with the Pacers, but Isaiah was a disaster, kind of.
He was a guard from 86 to 72. Then he was a coach from 69 to 72 and also 77 to 85. That included back-to-back consecutive NBA Finals trips and the 79 championship.
Yeah, against the then known as the Washington Bullets before they became the Wizards.
I know you and I have talked off the podcast. I think J-Man and I talked about on the podcast that the Wizards might be the worst NBA franchise there is right now.
It might be one of the worst sport professional sports franchises.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty lousy. So. Yeah. Number two is Fred Brown, guard from 71 through 84.
Downtown Fred Brown, University of Iowa guy. He was a kind of like a sixth man on the Seattle teams that made those two NBA finals. He could light it up.
Yeah, he played each of his 13 seasons for the Sonics and ranked second in games and points.
Yeah, I'm surprised he was number two.
Yeah, I'm surprised this guy was number three and not number two. And that's Gary Payton, was guard for the Sonics from 1990 through 03.
Yeah, nicknamed the Glove.
Yep, yeah, nicknamed for his defense, but he's their all-time leader in points, assists, and three-pointers.
Interesting. He was from Oregon State. Yeah, he could play. Hall of Famer.
Number four, a player and an assistant coach for the Sonics, Jack Sikma, was a center from 77 to 86 and assistant coach from 03 through 07.
Yeah, he had this weird shot directly over his head. But he was one of those centers that could hit that 8-foot turnaround shot. He came from little tiny Illinois Wesleyan College, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when they drafted him, nobody had ever heard of him because he came from nowhere. But I don't think he made the Hall of Fame, but he'd be one of those guys that'd be right on the border.
He didn't, but it's kind of crazy looking at his – I mean, he played 9 years for the Sonics, appeared in 7 All-Star games, their all-time leading rebounder, and 3rd in scoring. I mean, I think right there, that's Hall of Fame worthy.
There's guys in there now that probably don't have those credentials.
Yeah. Number five, Ray Davis and you were just talking about him. Sean Kemp was a forward for the Sonics from 89 through 97.
Yeah. Well, because he was somewhat local here, I followed his career. And he was probably one of the best dunkers in NBA history. And he could bring that Seattle crowd to life.
The Rang Man and...
What? No, I'm sorry. You're right.
The Rang Man, and in the year the Sonics went to the finals, 96, he averaged 23.3 points per game that year. So that was his career year.
Yeah.
And number six, the last guy of the pick six, since it's the number six guy on this list, that the Seattle Times came out with, Gus Williams, guard from 1977 through 84.
Yeah, super quick. Yeah, he was the leading point guard on that those two great Seattle teams. You know, the year they won the championship, they started out 5-17.
Oh my gosh! No, I did not.
Lenny inserted Gus Williams into the starting lineup, and it wasn't all because of him, but he was something. You know, I'm surprised Detlef Schrempf wasn't on there.
Detlef is 17th.
Okay. I still think of him more Seattle than I did when he was a Pacer. He was really athletic when he was first in the league. And
Gus Williams, they called the Wizard on here.
Yeah.
He was 2-time All-Star. Some notable guys that didn't make the top six, Nate McMillan, 7, George Karl, 8, Spencer Haywood, 9, Dennis Johnson, 10, Tom Chambers, 11, Bob Rule, 12, Bill Russell, 13th as coach/GM from 73 through 77.
Right.
Dale Ellis, 14th. Xavier McDaniel, 15th. Ray Allen, 16th. Then Detlef Schrempf, 17th.
Well, I think I also think that Scottie Pippen was drafted by Seattle and did
it. He was drafted.
And they traded that day, and Chicago got Pippen, and I forget who Seattle got for him. Might have been someone like Cliff Levingston or something. I can't remember. Maybe it was Antoine Carr, but it was somebody who became a journeyman, and Pippen kind of took off.
Kevin Durant's 31st on this list.
Oh yeah, he played 1 year in Seattle.
Played 1 year, his rookie year.
Yeah,
but
before they became Oklahoma City.
Steve Scheffler, 39th. He did make the list.
Yeah, that's probably 39 points in his whole career, but
He was a forward from 92 through 97. He says the gregarious, towel waving, high fiving, deep reserve was a fan favorite who saw action when the game was out of hand.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it said.
Yeah.
He is, like I said, though, he is ahead of Desmond Mason, who was a high flyer for the Sonics. He's 40th. And then Squatch, it says, was the mascot from 93 through 08.
Oh, they also had a reserve named Slick Watts.
Yes, I saw him on here. Let's see. Where was he? He's 25th.
Yeah.
On here. Yep. So, very cool. Very cool. Well, hopefully they do come back one of these years so I can become a fan and get my bowl prediction right, because it's one of my bowl predictions every single year. So,
there you go.
Ray Davis on Facebook said, one of the first big men to start fast breaks without having to get the ball to the guard. He's talking of Sean Kemp.
Yeah, I didn't think he was talking about Scheffler. So.
But that is the Pick Six segment, which is brought to you by Like Is Every Week, Performa Print 2 Promo Group. If you're looking for a trustworthy, dependable resource for your next trade show, company picnic, or a sales meeting in 2024, Performa Print 2 Promo Group has over 50 years combined experience in promotional products and commercial print. They strive for a fast and efficient response to all your print needs. You need to look no further. Let them be your one-source print and promotional company today by giving Barbara Van Weinsberg a call at 574-210-3815. Well, Dad, you want to get educated and learn about some sporting events that have happened on June 10th?
Well, yeah.
All right. Looks like a lot of horse racing, a lot of Belmonts. But here's one. On this date, 1880, the MLB's Boston Red Caps outfielder Charlie Jones became the first player to hit two home runs in one inning. Both were off of Tom Poorman in a 13-3 win over the visiting Buffalo Bisons.
That record still holds. Nobody's ever hit three in an inning.
That's true. That's true. A lot of Belmont. And we're getting some U.S. Open, some British Open, but let's get later on. Maybe I can quiz you on that. On this day, 1952, Chicago White Sox outfielder Sam Melle, is only the sixth MLB player to record six RBIs in an inning during a 15-4 win over the A's in Philadelphia.
That's a good inning.
Yep. On this day, 1959, MLB's Cleveland Indians, as they're known then, Rocky Calavito hit his four home runs in one game in an 11-8 win over the Orioles.
It's been a while since we've seen a guy hit four in one game.
Also, baseball on this day, 1962, a one-day record of 54 home runs were hit in baseball.
Yeah, it's been broken, I'm sure.
You think so? 54 homers in one day?
Yeah, well, there's a lot more teams now than there was then.
That's true. That's true.
And they have designated hitters now, and they didn't then, because pitchers absolutely couldn't hit. That's Sean.
Let's see here. On this day, 1977, this American golfer became the first player in history to post a sub-60 score with a 59 in a PGA Tour-sanctioned event during the second round of the Danny Thomas Memphis Classic at Colonial Country Club. Can you name this player?
Al Geiberger.
Yes, you are correct. Got some tennis. On this day, 1981, Pete Rose tied Stan Musial's NL record of 3,630 hits.
Okay.
It's pretty good. Should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't care if he bet it or not. On this day in 1990, the Pistons beat the Trailblazers for the first time since 1974 in Portland.
So that was the NBA Finals that year, right?
Yes. Yeah. So the Pistons hadn't won in Portland in 16 years going into that series.
I'll be done.
On this day, 1996, the first game of the Stanley Cup Finals were played in Miami, Florida, like we said. The Colorado Avalanche won 1-0 in triple overtime. Yeah, they would go on to sweep that series. So,
Yeah, on one to nothing.
That's a lot of scoreless hockey.
That's a lot of nothing.
1997, Kevin Brown of the Florida Marlins no hit the San Francisco Giants in a 9-0 win.
He was nasty for a couple of years.
Yeah, he was not a very good Yankee. Decent Dodger.
Is there such a thing as a good Yankee?
On this year's team, there are quite a few this year.
Yeah. So,
who won the NHL Stanley Cup on this day in 2000?
The NHL Stanley Cup 2000. Boston Bruins.
Good guess, but the New Jersey Devils beat the Dallas Stars 2-1 in double overtime for a 4-2 series victory.
Okay.
Got some French Open. Got some LPGA. Got some senior men's golf. I think that's going to do it because the French Open was pretty much dominated by Nadal on this day. So,
well, yeah.
Over the last
2 decades. I think he won 14 French Opens. So,
yeah. So that's going to do it for the On This Day sporting events that have happened on June 10th, brought to you by, like they are every week, Moody Woodcrafts. Moody Woodcrafts is a veteran owned and operated woodcraft shop based out of Texas with Indiana grassroots. They provide 100% hand cut custom designs to fit your needs. And their pieces are a great addition to any home, office, or man cave. You can see some of their recently completed projects by visiting them on Instagram and on Facebook. At Mooney Woodcrafts is their handle on those two social media platforms. And if you let them know the Tan and J-Man Show sent you, you get 15% off your first sign order. Probably a little too late for the Father's Day sign since Father's Day is this upcoming Sunday. So everybody out there, just remind you, Father's Day is on Sunday. But you can get an order in for an early Christmas present, a birthday present, anniversary present, whatever it may be. A great looking wooden sign makes the perfect gift for the sports fan in your family, sports friend. Doesn't even have to be a sports fan. It can be a part of the military, whatever it is that can make you a sign for it. So like I said, tell them the Tan J-Man Show sent you. Get a hold of them on social media. 15% off your first sign order.
I heard an appropriate gift for Father's Day is a new set of golf clubs. So we'll see.
Yeah. I'd like one of those myself. And I'm not a father. So
yeah. Just saying.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah. I don't even know what to say. I got some comments, but I'm not fast enough on my feet tonight. It's been a long day. So but yes, the third of the four golf majors is this weekend, the 2024 U.S. Open being held at Pinehurst number 2. They got a lot of Pinehurst out there in North Carolina. I don't even know. What do they have, 8 or 9 of them now?
8 that I know of, but I think they're building a 9th.
Working on a 9th. So number 2 is, though, probably the most famous one. This is the first U.S. Open it's held in a decade since 2014 when – I believe it was Justin Rose.
It was actually Martin Keimer.
Martin Keimer won the U.S. Open.
Rose won the year before in Philadelphia.
That's right. Ricky Fowler and Eric Compton tied for second in the U.S. Open in 2014. Yeah. My favorite, Ricky Fowler. Your least favorite, Eric Compton.
And Brooks Koepka got fourth. He's an unknown rookie.
Yeah, yeah. What was going to happen to his career? Yeah. But before we get into talking about the U.S. Open, do have a comment here from Ray Davis on Facebook. I did get a new set of irons for my 60th birthday. They are very nice. The new Callaways.
See, you could take after Ray and get to your dad a new set of Callaways.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for putting that pressure on me. Added pressure.
But that's a great thought.
Before we get into the U.S. Open, and myself and your wife, of course, my mom and my wife, your daughter-in-law, we all went to the Memorial Tournament at Jack's Place over Mirfield Village for the third round on Saturday over the weekend. And you and I had been there 3 different times, I think in 2011, 12, and 13, if I'm not mistaken, but it's been 11 years since we've been over there. What'd you think of the Memorial third round?
Well, it was tremendous. I think the course has gotten longer and hillier in 11 years, or I've gotten older. I'm not sure which one.
All the above.
I think your mom slept for 18 straight hours after that day walking.
Well, when we got home Saturday night, I looked at my phone and my step count was close to 15,000 steps
for the day. Yeah, that's that is one great golf course though, and the homes.
Gosh, on there, those guys can make it look easy at times, can't they?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. You asked me what I thought I could shoot, and
at your very best.
Yeah, yeah. It's particularly from the tees they play. It would just be, and those par threes they have that are like 210, 215. It's not the length. They're only like the size of a mud puddle. I mean, they're so small, and I just marvel at these guys in the rough, because we were walking outside the ropes and that rough was thick. I mean, these guys are so good.
Well, and the bunkers are deep, and they make it look like nothing.
Yeah. The ones that they were hitting on the green from 170 yards, I think I'd had to take a 60-degree wedge and just try to lob it out of there.
I know. So, and they're hitting 5 and 6 irons out of it.
Yeah. It's... your mom and I set up behind the 17th green for the last hour, hour and a half. And that's one of these little nasty 490 yard holes. That's 25 feet up you got to go up the hill to get to it. And these guys were throwing 7 and 8 irons in there and they were hitting like concrete and bouncing into the heavy rough. Yep. Here we were no more than 10 yards from them and you couldn't see their ball. And they'd pitch it up close and make par. It's just silly. Yeah, I did make the average 6-7 handicap golfer, you know, who's used to shooting 77, 78, 79 into 99, 100, 105 type golfer, because it's that hard.
Well, we know the Masters, PGA Championship, the U.S. Open, and the Open, a.k.a. the British Open, are the big four majors. Then you got, you know, the quote-unquote fifth major, the Players. After that, Memorial's probably got to be in the discussion for the biggest tournament.
I absolutely agree. I know Phoenix, because the amount of people they get, and it's on Super Bowl Sunday, is a very popular one. But the golf course, and I happen to see both of them, can't compare to this one in Muirfield. So I would think that would be on everyone's radar that's on the tour, you know, if they want a big event. That's one you'd want to get. Plus Jack.
Yep. It was cool yesterday before Scottie Scheffler officially won his first tournament since becoming a dad, and his first tournament winning outside the months of January, February, March, or April.
Right.
Before he did that, Jack Nicklaus announced that the 2005 honoree of the tournament is going to be his wife, Barbara Nicklaus. And Jack could not keep it together emotionally. When he was talking about that,
I saw tears come down as I didn't know what caused it. So,
yep. So, okay. I mean, Barbara's still living, but you know, he gave her flowers and said, you know, there is no Jack Nicklaus without Barbara. There is no Jack's career without Barbara. And there is no tournament without Barbara. And he said she is a part of everything they do there. And so he really struggled keeping it together, but I thought that was pretty touching. And then, like I said, Scottie Scheffler winning first win as a dad. Colin Morikawa gave him all he wanted down the stretch.
But, no boy.
Scotty is number one in the world for a reason.
Yeah, well, you remember Morikawa, I think it was the COVID year, got in a two-man battle with Justin Thomas.
Right.
And one of them hold a 50-foot putt on 18, mm-hmm. thought they won, and then Morikawa turns around and hits a 30-footer to tie. You know, going into the Open right now, there's only three PGA American guys that I consider red hot, and that's Scotty, who's in a different planet, Schauffele, and Morikawa. You know, some of the other names, the Thomases, the Spieths, Finau, you know, some of these guys you're really not hearing from. Finau played decent this week, top 10, I think. But
well, the defending champion, Wyndham Clark's starting
up. He's struggling.
Making cuts all of a sudden.
Yeah, he was hot the first couple months of the year. And right now it's just those three I named that seem to be on top of their games. From this tour, you know, then you got DeChambeau and some of the others from the LIV tour, but
well, if Americans, DeChambeau, Koepka, as far as LIV Americans, then you probably go clear down to Dustin Johnson.
Yeah,
as far as betting odds. I'm looking at the betting odds.
Yeah. Dustin's due for a big one.
Yeah.
He's starting to so play better over there.
Betting odds, Scottie Scheffler is your betting favorite, 11-4. Rory McIlroy is 10-1, and this will be the J-Man's, not Tanner's, the J-Man's book of prediction of the week. Rory McIlroy gets it done for his first major since 2014 by winning the U.S. Open. J-Man is 0-30. It started with the 2017 Masters. He's 0-30 when picking Rory in the majors. That's not even counting the non-majors we have picked once in a while when he picks Rory. So it's 0-30. So will number 31 be the charm?
Wasn't he 0-30 as a senior year in baseball in one stretch too? Or is that just my imagination?
I think he went 5-41 his junior year. Okay. Right. But he had a good bounce back senior year to get second all TRC. But yeah, the over 30 is kind of a rough number because, you know, we were talking about UConn earlier. They went on that 30-0 run against Illinois. So the 0-30 combinations kind of ruffles J-Man's feathers a little bit. But
yeah, I'm sure it does.
But that is the J-Man's Book of Prediction of the Week, which is brought to you by Like It Is Every Week, Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance agent Travis Watchering. Travis is a multi-line agent for Indiana Farm Bureau Insurance, specializing in home insurance, auto insurance, life insurance, renter's insurance, annuities, and more. You can contact Travis today for any of your insurance needs at 219-869-4561 or at travis.watchering@infb.com.
I think this Open has 19 former U.S. Open champions in the field.
That is quite a few. I did see Adam Scott barely qualified, but
yeah,
he qualified.
He's never won the U.S. Open. But
well, and the reason I bring Adam Scott up is he has a record, not a record, but the most out of the active tour players. He has the most consecutive major appearances.
Yeah,
and it's 23 straight years. This is his 92nd consecutive major appearance.
That's pretty impressive.
The next longest is Jordan Spieth with 43.
And that's almost 12 years. Jordan had to play each one for 12 years just to catch that.
Yep. Yep. So, I mean, Adam Scott is a major champion, not at the U.S. Open. I doubt he is in the mix this week, but you never know. But like I said, Scotty 11-4, your number one in the odds. Rory number two, but he's tied with Xander Schauffele, Bryson DeChambeau, Victor Hovland, then right behind them, Ludvig Åberg right behind them with Colin Morikawa, then Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, which I wouldn't put any bet on John Rahm. He pulled out with an injury this past week.
Yeah.
Patrick Cantlay and Cam Smith, Max Homa all 28-1, Wyndham Clark 33-1, Justin Thomas. Hideki Matsuyama 35-1, Cameron Young, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Matt Fitzpatrick 40-1, and then just looking at some other big names, everybody's probably wondering where's Tiger Woods, where's Phil Mickelson? Well, they, along with my guy Ricky Fowler, are all 125-1 odds.
That still seems a little optimistic for Tiger and Phil.
Former Boilermaker Adam Shank, 175-1 odds. Also with Adam Hadwin. I kind of like that. I kind of like Hadwin as a dark horse.
Yeah. For years, I've always thought Corey Connors was a great major player who's due for one. But this particular golf course, they have a lot of runoff that doesn't go into deep rough. It just continually runs off the green. Mm-hmm. So chipping, you have the object of putting up these hills. It's never produced superstar winners. It had Payne Stewart in 99, which when he won by one over Phil and by two over Tiger and Vijay. So that was a superstar field. But I think Michael Campbell, I think he won at this golf course. And then, of course, mm-hmm. Martin Keimer. So – And then one year they played dual men's and then women's U.S. Opens mm-hmm. on back-to-back weeks. I remember Michelle Wee West won the women's. So I got a couple names I just kind of put in the back of my mind that might be – I think that Matt Fitzpatrick might be an interesting pick. He seems to have a U.S. Open type game. And I kind of like this Sepp Straka. He's always in the hunt, you know. If obviously the overwhelming favorite's got to be Scotty. He's on another planet right now, but he did show some weaknesses yesterday with the putter. For the first time in a while, he wasn't making putts until he absolutely had to on the 18th hole. But
Ray Davis asked about Jason Day. Jason Day is 45-1 odds, and he's been playing some good golf as of late. So
he did. He has. His career could use one more major in it, you know.
Thad Mooney said, Pinehurst has 9 courses with a mini course. Why did I get forced to move? Pinehurst was 25 minutes from my old house.
I've seen some of his slices. He might have hit that house from his house. Could he hit that course? Just kidding, Thad.
The guy with the worst odds is a former major winner, former number one in the world, Martin Keimer, 750-1.
You know, he was one out of the lead yesterday in the live.
Yeah. I mean, some of these other guys I've never, ever heard of. A lot of these other guys. But with all that said, Dad, I think it's time for you and I to predict our winners.
Oh. Why don't you go first?
Well, Thad says two shoulder surgeries later, and it's now a hook. It's a hook instead of a slice.
Oh, my gosh. like politics. He went way one side to the other, right?
I'm notorious picking the live guys for these. So I'm sticking with that. Who do I want to pull the trigger on? I think Mickelson will be in contention. I don't think he'll win, but I think Phil the Thrill gives one more good run at the U.S. Open that he's never got.
Six runner-ups.
I'm going with Cameron Smith.
That's interesting because that's who I came up with too.
All right.
He's probably the best putter in the world. He's not been hitting the ball real good, but I'm not a big Mick Fitzpatrick fan. And he's not even, you know, I hear I said you have to be a great chipper, and he chips cross-handed. But it wouldn't shock me. The guy's got that U.S. Open type game where
he won it 2 years ago.
Probably be 5 under or less.
Yep, so, he beat Zalatoris for it 2 years ago. So,
yeah.
And right before we get to your birdie or bogey question, I got a write-in question here from Tanya Shriver, wife of Sean Shriver, who's a loyal viewer of the show every week and one of your best friends. He said, it says, "Hi, Tanner, since your dad skimmed over the analysis of cricket, could he give a detailed breakdown on the competitive auctioneering tournament?"
Well, I'm still doing some research into that, but that sounds like it'd be a lot of fun, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Oh, I didn't know there was such a thing, but there's tournaments for everything anymore. So,
yeah. Thanks for that question, Tanya.
Yes. One more time, hit me with that birdie or bogey question, please.
Who's the last person to win in a playoff in a major golf championship?
Patrick, but I don't think that's right, but I'm going with Matt Fitzpatrick.
Nope, he won on the 18th hole over Will Zalatoris. It was Zach Johnson in 2015 at the British Open.
I could have guessed 20 guys and I wouldn't have got Zach Johnson right.
I think he beat Mark Leishman and Stuart Appleby. No, it wasn't Appleby. I forget, but it was Zach Johnson. That had been one in a while.
Yep. Well, thanks, Dad, for filling in for the J-Man. Thanks to Ray Davis, Thad Mooney, for sending in questions and comments on Facebook. Thanks to Tanya Shriver for texting me that comment. And if you haven't already, please like, subscribe, follow at Tan and J-Man Show on all social media platforms and on your favorite audio podcast platform. Please make sure you're following us, subscribing us, give that 5-star rating to us. We really appreciate it. It helps us out. And happy early Father's Day, Dad, and happy early Father's Day to all the great fathers out there. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel.
Thank you.